Becky joins the Stonewall Democrats' Jeremy Davis next on the Rebecca Giro Show podcast for October 27th, 2011.
I had every fear and worry you could imagine. What are my friends going to think? Is my family going to disown me? Will anybody be able to truly love me for who I believe I am? I'm here to help young people avoid going through years of struggling inside. Don't wait till you're 40 to be who you are. Be who you are now, because the real you is just perfect.
What a nice thought, Becky. That is Chaz Bono, of course, getting his Glisten Hero Award last Friday.
Oh, hi, everybody. How you doing? Is the Rebecca Giro Show. That would be me. Whoa. And, of course, along with the ever-amazing Mr. Mike Scott, that would be him.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, wow. It's you know, I don't know. I guess not the same by you, Mr. Mike, but out here, it's starting to get chilly. It's starting to feel like fall and leaves on the ground and all that kind of stuff.
And overnight, boy, it was 32 degrees here.
Ooh, and, wow, you're chillier than we are. Well, of course, you're up in the mountains, we should point out to people.
I'm not in Joe Arpaio land here in Arizona.
I don't have to defend myself against that vicious attack. Mm-hmm. So he can have his opinion. I know what I am.
I am in the lovely mountains of Arizona where it's teabag central, but we don't have Joe to deal with. And that's a good thing.
That's a very good thing. That's right. A very good thing. But anyway, good to have you all along with us. I hope you stuck around through our little opening segment there. We started a little bit late because we had some housekeeping to do before we got started. I'm sorry about last week. We had another technical issue. You know, of course, this show, it's always an adventure. But we are here now, and tonight's guest is, I'm very excited about this, Jeremy Davis, who is, of course, the co-founder, along with Bill Browning, of the Bolerico Project. But tonight, we're going to be talking to him in his new role, which is as interim executive director of the National Stonewall Democrats. And this is pretty cool. Jeremy and I have had discussions on at Bolerico in the past about, you know, the kind of things that we talk about a lot on this show, the Democrats, is, you know, if we can't trust these folks to get the job done when they have the votes, when they have the wind at their backs, when they have all the support they need, well, do they really deserve our support? And should we be supporting these folks regardless of what they do, even when they fail us? Or should we be doing what kind of what the Tea Party does? Should we be looking to say, you know what, you're not progressive enough for us, so we're going to look for candidates to primary you? I mean, that's what the Tea Party did. For example, look at Bob Bennett in Utah. He wasn't conservative enough for the Tea Party, so they primaried him, and now you know, there's a new senator. I forget his name, but they successfully primaried Bob Bennett out of that seat and replaced him with a Tea Party guy. Should we start doing that as a community and start saying, you know what, if you're not going to subscribe, if you're not going to deliver on the issues that we care about, we're going to replace you. Or at least we're going to try damn hard to replace you. And, of course, we're going to be talking to Jeremy about that. We're going to ask his opinion. We're going to, I have questions about the National Stonewall Democrats. It's a good organization, good mission, all that stuff. We're going to ask him about that. But also, you know, where is the line? Where do we say, when do we say, no, not good enough? You have to do more. If you want my vote, if you want my money, if you want my support, if you want me making phone calls, if you want me knocking on doors for you, you got to do more for me. When the opportunity comes to pass a bill like the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which languished in the United States Congress for two generations, and you have the votes to pass it and you don't, just like elections have consequences, failure to take care of your base should have consequences too. At least that's my opinion. We'll be talking to Jeremy in just a little bit to get his opinion and also to get the opinion of the National Stonewall Democrats, because I'll admit to you, I'm a little bit wary of organizations that say, you know, we're all for Democrats no matter what. And I say, well, you know what? I'm for the liberals, I'm for the progressives, but I'm for Democrats when Democrats do what they say they're going to do. Not when they may, or not when what we're hearing from these folks is excuses as why they didn't do it. Or even of George Miller, when we don't even get that much. We just, you know, we get either lame excuses, you know, promises, oh, we're going to introduce the bill, we're going to introduce the bill, and it just never happens. No explanation, no nothing. Or we get from Nancy Pelosi when they finally corner her at Netroots Nation and we ask her, well, why did you go for the repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell instead of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? Why did you focus on the jobs of a fraction of 1% of those serving in the military, but not the country to which they will return once their term of service is over? And she says, well, that's what the activists told us they wanted. And nobody knows who those activists are. Or why they would say that, what gives an answer that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever and expects people to just accept that because it came from, you know, Nancy Pelosi. When you have behavior like that from Democrats who apparently don't feel that they have, you know, the responsibility to not only make promises, but to keep those promises. When you have a president like Barack Obama who says we're going to use executive orders to get done what the Congress refuses to do, but none of the executive orders that they seem to be talking about involve protecting LGBT workers, which he could do by signing an executive order like the one that's been called for. We'll get into all of that. I'm not going to go down that road right now, even though I've just spent the last few minutes on it. But, you know, what we also need to do is I think we need to be speaking out a little bit more. You know, On the one hand, I resist when people try to tell me, oh, it's that, you know, the community isn't lobbying hard enough. I resist that because I say, you know what? That shouldn't matter. And I don't think it does. I think what it is the community doesn't donate enough money to the Democratic Party. The community doesn't represent enough votes. I think that's the real problem here. And we're going to get into that. Again, we're going to get into that with Jeremy at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be ringing him up about 7:30, so stick around for that. In the meantime, there's a few other stories that I thought were really kind of interesting this week. For one thing, we had a 7-year-old, I hesitate because, you know, it's a 7-year-old. I want to say a 7-year-old little girl, but it's a 7-year-old biological boy who, wants to live as a girl. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I'm not sure that a person that young is capable of saying this is how I identify. So I'm trying to be a little cautious here. We're talking about a child, and I don't want to try to put identity issues onto somebody who may not have the maturity and capacity to decide those issues for his or herself. I want to be careful. I don't want to try and, you know, I mean, we're misgendered and misidentified, and we see people taking on our own, you know, identifying us as they see fit. I don't want to do that to this kid. So I'm being very cautious here. So I'm avoiding calling this child a girl. Wants to live as a girl, certainly. And what went on here was a 7-year-old, Bobby Montoya, wants to join the Girl Scouts. But he was originally rejected because, according to this article, and this comes to us from 9 News Now, from 9news.com, was rejected because, and I'm quoting here, he is a boy. Bobby's mother, Felicia, was rejected. Okay, now this took place in Denver. Bobby was rejected by a Denver Girl Scout troop because, quote, he has boy parts. And she said that she's still waiting for an official call and an apology from the Colorado Girl Scouts. The mom said that she asked a local troop leader if her transgender son could join. And I'm reading this off the article here. I'm not trying to gender this child in any specific way because, you know, it's difficult. Again, it's difficult to know, and I don't want to try and put that on this kid. So I'm reading it as it was presented. Asked the local troop leader if her transgender son could join the Girl Scouts, but was initially rejected. Later, a supervisor, this is kind of cool, later a supervisor from the Colorado Girl Scouts acknowledged that the organization would include the seven-year-old, but the mom is still awaiting final word. She said, "They haven't called me directly. When I talked to the top person, I said Bobby wants to be in the Girl Scouts but have a different leader. She never called me back and only said they would give the local leader who rejected him sensitivity classes." Apparently, Bobby was, of course, born with male genitalia but has been convinced since the age of two that he is a girl. His biggest worry, said his mother, is that he will have to change his name. And now the mom says, "I believe he was born in the wrong body," who admitted that even she has difficulty switching from male to female pronouns when talking about her son. She said, "I thought Bobby would grow out of it. For birthdays, he asked for ponies. He had a princess birthday, and last year when he turned seven, he had a Rapunzel birthday. I have just basically supported him." 3 weeks ago, the mom was approached by a local Girl Scout leader who only identified herself as Mary and asked if Bobby could join the troop. Excuse me. Bobby's mother said the troop leader humiliated Bobby and he dissolved into tears. The Girl Scouts of Colorado has publicly said it supports transgender children, and it released a statement this week saying the group is an inclusive organization. The statement, which was released by GLAAD, reads, "If a child identifies as a girl and the child's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts of Colorado welcomes her as a Girl Scout." The Girl Scouts of Colorado also said in their statement that it is reaching out to the family of the excluded child and will be altering its training programs so that all girls are supported. Yeah, rock on. The mom said she still doesn't know what the Girl Scouts intend to do about Bobby and the leader. She also questions why it's such a big deal. Yeah, really. "He dresses like a girl," she said, "and you can't tell he's a girl? But the Girl Scout leader told us he can't join because he has boy parts. But no one would know he's a boy unless they pulled his pants down." The mom also said the troop leader asked her, "What do you call it, a boy or a girl?" referring to Bobby. "And I told her, 'Excuse me?' Then she fixed it and said, 'Bobby, you can see that's a boy's name. Everyone will know he's a boy.' After hearing that exchange, Bobby was in tears. He kept asking, 'Do I have to change my name?' They were only making s'mores. She humiliated him in front of everyone. Actually, I had to stop her in her words. He was standing right there. I told Bobby to go wait in the hallway." Bobby has told his mother he believed he was a girl ever since he was very young. And he just liked, she said, "He just liked girl stuff. When he was 4 or 5, he asked me, 'Why didn't you make me a girl?' Until now, Bobby has dressed as a boy in school, but wore a dress to school one day and was teased," said his mom. "Since the confrontation with the Girl Scouts, Bobby has identified and dressed as a girl in public." Rock on. Good for Bobby and good for Bobby's mom. It's nice to see this happening because I'll tell you, you know, back when I was a kid and probably most of you listening to this, when we were kids, this could not have happened, okay? And I'll tell you something else. I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the air. When I was a kid, I was a Cub Scout, and I was a Boy Scout later on. I was, okay? Well, you know, that was when I was still in my phase where I figured, you know, I could cure myself. And I didn't live in a world where that kind of thing was acceptable. I didn't live in a world where saying, I feel like I was born a girl, like I should have been born a girl, would have been an acceptable thing to say. In fact, every message that I got, not really from my parents, because my parents didn't know anything and they couldn't know to say one thing or another. But I, you know, I knew enough, even at a very young age, even at that age, at the age of seven and even younger, that that would not be well accepted. And I would imagine that's probably true for most of you if you're a transgender person or even a gay or lesbian person. We understood that when we were kids. Now, of course, sexual identity, romance, that sort of thing usually doesn't develop until one is preteen or teen. But gender identity, at least for me, I can't speak for anyone else, of course, but at least for me, I knew what was going on when I was 5 years old. You know, I figured it out. You know, I would see girls around or in my school, and I knew that's what I wanted to be, but I also knew that it was bad for me. Do you know what I'm saying? I didn't understand why it was bad. I didn't understand that the... You know, one could. I didn't grow up in a world where there were options, where there was even an option considered, where the only thing that people knew, I mean, until I was like 14, 15 years old, the only thing I had ever heard about transsexuality was Rene Richards and Christine Jorgensen. You know, and they were defined as these weird, freakish people that, you know, very rare and you know. Nobody, you never understood. It was only when I became an older person, when I became an adult and had access to adult materials and adult information, that I was able to begin to understand what it was about and that there were other people, that this wasn't a one in a million kind of situation. And so what makes me most excited is two things about this. One is that the Girl Scouts of Colorado said that they are an inclusive organization. Would that the Boy Scouts felt the same way instead of fighting tooth and nail to exclude gays? Would that we had that across the board? But at least the Girl Scouts of Colorado, and I hope across the country, I hope the national organization, would, you know, that this is something that is universal, or at least hopefully becoming universal among the Girl Scouts organization. And what the heck, you know, when they come to your door, you see them at the mall, buy an extra box of cookies this year. What the hell? You know what I mean? Support these people. It's a good thing. It's good for us. Okay. Now, obviously we're going to be running short on time. We're gonna get into a little bit of Chaz Bono, and unfortunately he got booted off of Dancing with the Stars this week. But you know, he gave it a good run. In all honesty, I think he kind of lasted longer than he probably would have if he didn't have, you know, a team of folks, of supporters, a group of supporters that formed to support him. You know, just as the right-wing radicals came out of the woodwork, the Keith Ablow idiot from Fox News and those people came out to denounce him, you know, there were the other people on the other side. I mean, even Bill O'Reilly, Megyn Kelly from Fox News, both kind of said the same thing, and I'm not quoting word for word here, but basically their attitude was, what's the big deal? If this guy wants to live as a guy, who are we to say no? That's exactly what's going on. And it is just about time for our break. And while Mr. Mike will be getting Jeremy Davis on the phone, but in the meantime, while we wait for that, we are going to hear a song from called Angel from Montgomery by Veronica Klaus and Mark Weigel, and we'll see you in a couple.
I am an old woman, look like my mother. My old man is another child that's grown old. dreams were lightning, thunder, desire. This old house would have burned down a long time ago. Make me an angel, flash from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go. When I was a young man, I had me a cowboy. There weren't much to look at, just a free rambling man. That was a long time, no matter how I tried. The years just float by like a broken down nail. Make me an angel, flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing. This living is just a hard way to go. There's flies in the kitchen, I can hear them buzzing. And I ain't done nothing since I woke up today.
How the hell can someone gonna work every morning, come home every evening, and have nothing to say?
Make me an angel, flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to. Leaving this living is just a hard way to go. Leaving this living is just a hard way to go.
If we were going to go on a crusade across the nation and try to do away with the homosexuals, well, at least it's a fruit pie.
You won. A changes in those programs or changes in tax revenues or changes in other government programs is up to you, as you know.
Thank you. I yield back, Madam Chair.
The American people want to pass
the committee will,
in the
committee
war.
Will
That's
be
how
order,
we
please.
Fix the deficit. And all this obfuscation with percentages of GDP, this is just trying to confuse the issue.
The chair wishes to remind all of our guests
of
that
the public wants you to tax the rich in the war. We spend more on
I would request that the Capitol Police restore order.
And this history of this vast, grotesque spending on wars and the war machine.
The committee shall recess until we are in order.
The base of this economy is we would have enough money for housing and health care and everything that we want if we stop spending our money in the black hole of the military machine. It's very obvious. I think of another 9% in the war to tax the rich.
All right, we are back, and we have got Jeremy Davis on the line. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Great. How are you, Becky?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for coming on. And of course, we should let people know that in addition to being a co-founder of the Bolerico Project, the web guru, and the partner of the publisher, Bill Browning, your new job is the interim executive director of the National Stonewall Democrats. And so let's get right into it. First thing I wanted to ask you about was everybody knows about the National Stonewall Democrats. It's a name that's well-known in the community. But can you explain a little, what exactly does the National Stonewall Democrats do? How would you define their mission?
Well, you know, our mission is actually pretty simple. Electing pro-equality Democrats and holding them accountable. That's kind of that's what's on the back of my business card. And that's what we see ourselves as doing. To expand on that a little bit, we are the only partisan LGBT organization doing, you know, electoral work in the Democratic Party. So, you know, there are other LGBT groups that do electoral work, but they are nonpartisan or they are bipartisan, and they work with both parties equally. And, you know, we are strictly Democratic Party and only support pro-equality Democrats.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Now, another question I wanted to ask you was many LGBT people, especially in the 29 states where it's still legal to fire, refuse to hire, or deny housing and access to public accommodations just because someone is gay, and 35 states where that's true for transgender people, feel that, and I'll admit I'm one of them, as you well know, feel that the Democratic Party is very good at making promises to our community to support and protect our basic civil rights, but not so good at keeping those promises when it's time to deliver. Do you agree with that assessment?
You know, I think there's a mixed record, and I think it depends on if you're talking about, you know, state parties in specific states, or if you're talking about the national party, or, you know, which Democrats you're talking about. We have some very good friends in both state legislatures and in Congress, and the truth is that, you know, as a national party, the Democratic Party has been really good. You know, coming through with promises, if the party makes a promise, you know, that's marshaling a number of people who have all kinds of competing interests to take those votes. So, you know, while there are still some unfulfilled promises that we feel like, you know, we're deserving of, I think we've made a lot of progress with this party, and that's one of the reasons why I think that, you know, part of Stonewall's future is kind of shifting our view. We've been so successful at moving the Democratic Party into a more pro-equality space that now it's time to really kind of, you know, hammer that home and ensure that the new people coming into the party and the new folks that are getting elected remain true to those pro-equality values. You know, one of the big impediments to getting things done has actually been the Blue Dog Democrats caucus in the House and in the Senate. You know, it only takes, there were, what, 80 folks in the Blue Dog caucus total, but they could block anything that they didn't think was conservative enough, which is kind of odd coming from Democrats, but that wasn't conservative enough or didn't quite, you know, comport with their values. So, you know, one of the things that I see Stonewall taking a role in the future is ensuring that when we elect Democrats, they're pro-equality Democrats. They're not just, you know, bodies with a D behind their name.
Gotcha. Now, let me ask you another question. Along these same lines, what I'd like to know is where do you place the blame for you know, big ticket items like the Employment Non-Discrimination Act not even getting a vote despite all these promises? You know, is it, as some have said, including on this show, Babs Kasbar said this just a couple of weeks ago on the show, that our community hasn't lobbied hard enough? Or is it that it's, you know, the cowardice of certain Democrats who are kind of skittish on these issues?
You know, I think there's enough blame to go around for everyone. The truth is that as a community, our messaging hasn't been great on INDA. You know, there hasn't been an identifiable lead organization, although there's a new one forming. I don't know if you heard about it. Tiku Almeida, who was lead counsel for the Democrats in the House on INDA a couple years back, has started this new organization. Oh, goodness, the name is escaping me at the moment. But it is solely focused on passing INDA, and he has set a goal of having INDA on the books in the next 2 years. And I think that having an organization that's focused specifically and solely on INDA at this point is a good idea. You know, we've been trying to get something like INDA passed for, you know, over a decade now. And, you know, in some form, it goes back 30 years for some kind of employment non-discrimination for, you know, specifically for gays and lesbians, and now it's for all LGBT people. But, you know, I think that the party, you know, and some specific Democrats definitely deserve some blame. I mean, but the fact is that, like I was talking about the Blue Dog Democrats before, the impediment to passing INDA or even getting a vote on INDA had a lot to do with the Blue Dog Caucus saying they wouldn't vote for it. And, you know, a lot of those Blue Dogs lost in 2010. But now that the Republicans are in control of the House, there's no way that INDA is going to get a vote until we get the Democrats back in charge.
Okay. But, you know, we've also heard, we've heard this from Diego Sanchez, and Babs Kaczmar confirmed this as well when she was on the show, that back in the 111th Congress, which is the Congress that was in session from 2009 to the end of 2010, that they had the votes to pass INDA. And what we heard from, for example, George Miller was at least, now this is just my count, seven times that he promised that INDA would get a vote. We heard from, it never happened. And yet when Nancy Pelosi was questioned on this at Netroots Nation back in March, she said when they asked her why INDA didn't get a vote, and they went with Don't Ask, Don't Tell instead, she says, oh, that's what the activists told us that they wanted. And for the life of me, and I've certainly made an effort here, I cannot find a single activist who is willing to admit that that's what they asked for. Is this something that NSD was pushing or any other activists that you know? Because I certainly have not heard, you know, I mean, it's like they're telling us, oh, well, you know, this is what people wanted. But yet none of those people are willing to submit to that, and I don't understand it, you know?
You know, I wasn't with NSD when that actually happened, when the decision was made to kind of start pushing for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I actually came on board just after that occurred. So when I walked in the door, you know, we were definitely working with the folks who were working on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We were working with Service Members United and SLDN, and we'd done phone banking and stuff like that. But we were also working on INDA. You know, we were pushing, you know, our folks on the ground with our 80-some-odd clubs around the country to constantly be talking to their local members, you know, and their senators, and telling them how important INDA was, especially in the interior of the country and the places where, you know, we don't have protections, unlike, you know, like on the coast or Washington, D.C., and New York, and California all have a lot of protections. But in the interior of the country, which is actually where a lot of our clubs exist, they don't have protections. So INDA is definitely important to National Stonewall Democrats, but every LGBT issue is important to us because we are focused on making sure that the Democrats that get elected are indeed supporting all of our issues. So there's no single issue that we actually focus on. So we certainly weren't just focused on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and we certainly didn't, you know, consciously make a decision to switch over. In terms of why the Congress decided to switch their energy, there are a lot of stories that go around about why. I've heard so many different reasons. Ultimately, I think it boils down to the fact that there was a very narrow window of time where we had 60 votes in the Senate plus control of the House. And while certainly, you know, I think INDA could have passed the House, the path through the Senate really wasn't there. You know, when we had 60 votes, it only took one to peel off and join the Republicans for a filibuster. And there were, I believe, six or eight Blue Dog Democrats in the Senate at that time. And all of them were balking at the idea of INDA, especially if it included trans protections. So I don't know if there was a conscious move from the community. I'm not necessarily aware of that, but I do know that that shift ultimately ended in a win for, you know, at least gay and lesbian soldiers that can now serve openly in the military, which is a great thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about was back in March, Barty Frank told Metro Weekly's Chris Geidner that he didn't believe that the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act would be accomplished through Congress, but rather through the courts. And I've heard that repeated by a few other Democrats. And my question to you is given that, and I'm assuming Barney Frank is correct, or at least likely to be correct, and given the current state of the economy being what it is, and jobs prospects being what they are, do you think that the Democrats should be focusing on the Defense of Marriage Act like they are? We've had a hearing. There was just another hearing announced by Steny Hoyer, I believe, yesterday or today, and basically ignoring the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I mean, if you know, it's going to pass, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't presume to tell the Democrats what they should or shouldn't focus on, depending upon what their legislative priorities are and what they think they can and can't get done. You know, there's definitely energy behind the repeal of DOMA right now. There's definitely energy in both the Senate and the House to get that done. I don't necessarily know that it will, unless we can, you know, turn the House back Democratic control and keep control of the Senate and maybe grow our majority there. But in terms of whether or not they should be focused on ENDA, you know, one of the things that I think is certainly a possibility as we're talking about jobs and the economy and everything else is we really should be talking about ENDA. And that's just as much our responsibility as it is the Democrats' responsibility to, certainly. But, you know, there are multiple vehicles that I think are possible. You know, ENDA language could be worked into the jobs bill. ENDA could be worked into another jobs bill. Or it could be passed as a standalone to say, this is something that our country needs right now. We have people losing jobs, and it takes, you know, a year, 2 years for most people to find another job to replace that income in our current economic climate. So, you know, making sure that people are able to have some protection to keep their job when they have one is really important. On the flip side of that, though, in a downturn of the economy, being able to protect your spouse and get spousal benefits, such as insurance, medical insurance, and so forth, being able to file taxes if one of you are unemployed, if you can file jointly, having those tax benefits are important too. Maybe not necessarily as important as ENDA is, but you know, the passage of DOMA would definitely, or the repeal of DOMA would definitely help LGBT, gay and lesbian couples in a number of aspects.
Absolutely, but I've also heard it argued, and I think quite effectively, that they say, well, what good is having the right to marry and file joint tax returns if you can't get a job and feed your family and put a roof over their heads? Do you know what I'm saying?
That is a very good point. That is a very good point, and I totally agree. And, you know, that's one of the priority issues. And, you know, I mean, look at Don't Ask, Don't Tell. FLDN filed a landmark lawsuit just today to fight for spousal benefits for gay and lesbian soldiers who are married and in the military, because the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell obviously didn't cover that. And as of right now, the Pentagon doesn't offer benefits to gay and lesbian couples who are legally married in their state. So, you know, this is a pretty serious issue, and the repeal of DOMA doesn't fix everything. And I'm certain that no one out there is arguing that it's kind of the ultimate fix. It's just that so many things flow from that marriage relationship that it does, that if we can get to that point to where the country sees our relationships as legitimate and we can get those recognized legally, there are a lot of things that flow from that. I mean, it's logical that if I can marry my same-sex spouse, that I shouldn't lose my job for doing that. So there are a number of arguments that get strengthened by the repeal of DOMA.
Right. Okay. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about was that there's been a call for President Obama to issue an executive order prohibiting discrimination toward LGBT workers at businesses which do business with the government. We've just recently, just this week, in fact, heard the president say that he's now going to use executive orders to do what Congress won't on a variety of issues. Do you expect him to issue an executive order on LGBT workers at companies doing business with the government?
Well, I would certainly encourage him to do so. I know he's wrestling with that issue, and there's been a lot of discussion about that and a lot of push for that. I think that not only would that be good for the folks who would be directly affected, and there are a lot of businesses that do business with the federal government, so this would apply to a lot of people. And it would also strengthen the argument and make it easier, I think, to pass ENDA. So I certainly hope that he does it. I can't predict what will or will not happen. You know, this president has surprised all of us many times. And until the day that we get an announcement that there's a signing ceremony, I am just going to keep applying pressure and hoping that he does the right thing.
I hear you there. But, you know, along those lines, if, you know, if he's not willing to do something like that, which is something that obviously he can do without the support of Congress, he doesn't have to factor Congress in, you know, if he's not willing to do what he can do himself, then, you know, the question has to be asked, should the community be taking him seriously on LGBT worker rights?
Well, you know, two answers to that. First is, you know, when Obama came into office, one of the things that he said was a priority for him was pulling back on the power grab that the Bush administration had taken in, you know, their executive orders and signing statements and all of the things they did to consolidate power in the executive branch. And so he's been very reticent and very cautious about seeming like he's trying to rule by fiat. And I honor that. I think it's I think that the Bush administration did a lot of damage in that they gave way too much power. They were allowed to accumulate too much power in the executive, and that it is a good thing for President Obama to be rolling back on that. Now, we have over 2 years into this administration and dealing with this Congress and dealing with the intractability of the Republicans. It may be time to do some of those things just to say we have to get some things done. And I think that's the point he's gotten to. You know, he gave the Republicans plenty of chances to come along, play along, and do the right thing. And they've been interested in, you know, taking down Big Bird and closing down Planned Parenthood instead of creating jobs and doing the right thing for Americans. So, you know, I think that that hopefully we will see a more aggressive Obama, especially, you know, should he win a second term. But I do think that that he is also, which is kind of my second point, I think that they have done a lot of great work. And when you look at this administration's commitment and follow through for the LGBT community, while we've definitely had some missteps, we've also had some amazing, amazing progress. You know, the hospital visitation rights came out of the blue. No one knew that was coming.
Yes.
That was a great step. The agency work and the fundamental changes in how agencies and departments view our community is immeasurable how that's going to affect us going forward, because so much of that can't really be rolled back because they've changed the culture of how government sees LGBT people. You know, when you're looking at the trans community, for example, you know, now you can get your appropriate gender marker on your passport, which opens up the ability to travel, you know, outside the country and not have so many questions being asked. There's all kinds of things that this administration has done that would be almost impossible for other administrations to roll back. And while those aren't necessarily big-ticket items, they're absolutely important to getting the federal government to recognize us as legitimate citizens, first-class citizens of our country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Now, I know you have to get running, so let me hit you with one final question. I wanted you to talk a little bit about how the community can get involved and support the National Stonewall Democrats and your efforts.
Absolutely. You know, our website is www.stonewalldemocrats.org. You can get plenty of information about us there. All of our contact information is there. There are also I forget the exact count, but I know it's over 80 clubs, Stonewall Democrat clubs across the country. We have a list on our website. There's a map. You can click on your state and see what your local club is. I encourage everyone to join, you know, their local club and get involved. They do some amazing work with, you know, the Democratic Party locally and nationally. And if you don't have a Stonewall Club in your area, we'd love to talk to you about getting one started. We have a number of areas in the country that, you know, a number of states that still don't have a Stonewall Democrats Club, and we'd love to start one there. So you can give us a call at the office, send us an email, and sign up through our website for our email alerts, and get involved however you can.
Excellent. Jeremy, I want to say thanks. This is really awesome. You're a great guest. I hope we can do it again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, Becky. Anytime. Thanks
awesome.
For having me.
Thanks for coming on. All right. We'll talk to you later. All right. And that was Jeremy Davis, interim executive director of the National Stonewall Democrats, as well as the web guru and co-founder of the Bellerico Project and partner of Bill Brown, who have a show next week. And we'll be talking about, you know, blogging and stuff like that there next week. But we wanted to focus with Jeremy on the Democrats and his new position as the executive director of the National Stonewall Dems. And I was very excited. This was good. This is a great, great conversation. I was really, really happy that he was able to fit us in, because I know he's very busy tonight. He's
pretty motivational. I love the feeling of positiveness about this, and this is just the right timing. We people who are inclined to be progressives need to have feet on the ground for this one. Absolutely.
I totally agree. You know, and despite what I say, you know, I mean, I go off on the Democrats all the time. As people know, anybody who listens to this show knows perfectly well, I'm no slouch when it comes to calling out Democrats. Because frankly, you know, I believe that we should be holding these folks to a higher standard, because, you know, if they're going to go and campaign on these things, on these ideals, on these values, then, you know, when it's time to actually put up or shut up, they need to do that. You know, and so when they turn around and say, you know, yeah, we support you, except when it becomes inconvenient, well, then that's not good enough. And I think Jeremy was very right. Very on the mark there with, you know, a lot of these issues. But at the same time, I think his points about, you know, we've got these blue dogs in there now. Of course, they're not what they were in the 111th Congress. We knocked off about half of them, got knocked off in the last election. But I'll tell you the truth, what I believe, and of course, you know, take this for whatever it's worth. One tranny's opinion. But I think we are going to see, I think the cards are lining up for a Democratic landslide next year. I think I don't think that the Republicans are going to have a presidential candidate who is considered credible, even by, you know, by enough people to win the day. And we all know, because the polls show us, the previous elections show us, that a lot has to do with who takes Congress and who wins the lower, the state races and those kind of things during a presidential election. A lot depends on who's running at the top of the ticket. And I don't think it's a coincidence, for example, that when Barack Obama won the presidency, Democrats swept in and they won a lot of seats. And during the off election, during the off year election, they lost a lot of seats. I think we're going to see a landslide. Okay, for two reasons. First of all, not only because of President Obama, I think, you know, people support him. I think even if you have some issues with a lot of the stuff that he's done or isn't doing or whatever, you know, when push comes to shove, whether it's Mitt Romney or Herman Cain or any of these guys, Rick Perry, God help us.
Oh, dear.
I mean, yeah, Bush part two, please.
Oh, dear.
But regardless, I mean, I think when people say, you know, who would I rather have calling the shots in the White House? But Obama's going to win that argument. That's number one. Number two is I think that you know, I would not underestimate the impact of Occupy Wall Street and the rise of the progressive left that we are seeing in this country. It is already changing the conversation, okay? It is starting to change it from, oh, we've got to cut deficits, cut, to a different conversation of this economy is not working for anyone except for the super wealthy. And I think that that's a key point. And I think that we, as a community, can take advantage of that. And I think it's important that we do. I really do. I think it's important that we do what we can to get our candidates in office. And you know what? As much as, you know, I, generally speaking, support Democrats for the most part. I've declared myself an independent, by the way. I don't know if people know that. But I've declared myself an independent. I'm not officially part of the Democratic Party anymore. But at the same time, most of the time, I support the Democratic Party ideals. And I think we have to start saying, you know what? If you're not going to fight for us, we're going to run candidates who will. And it doesn't matter whether you're running for a local office or a state office or national office. Well, you know. But we're gonna challenge you. And if you're not willing to stand up for this community, we're gonna take a page out of the Tea Party. We're gonna take a page from the Tea Party and run candidates against you. Candidates who are, as Jeremy was saying, pro-equality, because I think we have too many anti-equality Democrats still in office. And I think we have to be able to say, if you want my support, if you want my money, if you want my vote, then you'd better support my issues. And hey, we are going to go to a quick break here. We have got Healing from DJ Joanne Lynn, who's a friend of mine from Second Life, and she's cool, and so we're going to listen to that, and we will be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll talk about some more news and stuff.
Ha ha. Your mushrooms are gone.
You won.
Mark Block here. Since January, I've had the privilege of being the chief of staff to Herman Cain and the chief operating officer of the Friends of Herman Cain. Tomorrow is one day closer to the White House. I really believe that Herman Cain will put United back in the United States of America. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen. But then, America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved, because together, we can do this. We can take this country back.
Herman Cain, a wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries. What a strange commercial. And then the guy smokes the cigarette at the end. That's even stranger.
Which I thought was like unbelievable. You know, and blows the smoke right into the camera, which is like, you know.
So smokers are going to vote for him? I think it's like a little thing that says, yeah, smokers vote for Cain. He's a libertarian guy.
I believe that's true. I do. I think he's like trying to convey a certain like everyman kind of feel, like, you know, hey, Herman Cain, he's just like you, you know, after all, you know, you work hard for a living and, you know, you, like Herman Cain, thinks that you should be paying more taxes while the rich get a huge tax cut on just his like, 999 plan.
Just like you, only he's a multimillionaire and he's had stage 4 cancer. Which is the other thing that makes him highly electable. I think it's like a joke. The Koch brothers are doing a joke on America with this guy. He's not electable, but he makes good theater. Bread and circuses is
Look for this guy. I guarantee you, he's going to wind up on Fox News or he's going to have another book out. I mean, he was doing book signings during the campaign. Okay, so. I'll tell you, I think he's running for? He's not running for president. He's running for the New York Times bestseller list. That's what he's running for. Right. He's running for an hour in the evening on Fox News. That's what he's running for. He's not a serious candidate. Mitt Romney, I'll tell you, I don't think, could he be a candidate? Sure, John McCain could be a candidate, so why couldn't he? But can he beat Obama? Can he win? Okay, with a significant portion of the GOP participating in Stop Romney campaigns with 25%? I think I saw that say they won't vote for a Mormon.
Wow, I have not seen that poll, but that's probably that sounds exactly right. Fundamentalist religious people hate the Mormons; they really do. Right. They cannot trust them, and
they think it's a cult. Yeah, they think it's a cult, and I think that's the problem with all of these candidates, from Romney and Cain and Rick Perry and all of them, is they play reasonably well, or at least moderately well, in the primaries, where it's all Republicans, where it's, you know, Republicans deciding which guy they want to run. Okay, but if a guy like Mitt Romney can't get over 25% in his own party, how the hell is he supposed to beat Obama in the general election? I just don't see it. Okay, add to that the Occupy Wall Street stuff that's going on and some unbelievable stuff going on. Mike, why don't you run actuality number 4? This is just incredible, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
It's hard to see exactly how this demonstrator was wounded, but if you doubt that the police were deliberately aiming at the protesters, watch this policeman when a group of protesters attempt to come to the aid of the injured person.
What happened? What happened?
You got hit. Oh,
you got
your
shot.
What's your name?
What's your name?
Wake up.
What's your name?
What's your name?
Shit.
Did he say
medic! Medic!
Jesus. That's so hard to listen to.
Unbelievable. Now, for those who don't know, obviously he said, watch this policeman, okay, which you obviously couldn't do because it's radio. What happened there was a cop or some kind of a person who was there working with the police, if not an actual policeman themselves, when the protesters came, first they fired a flashbang grenade, which was close to this guy, Scott Olson. And then when protesters crowded around him and tried to rescue him, they fired another grenade at the protesters who were trying to help the guy.
And you can see the cop throw the grenade right into the middle of all these people, including the injured guy. It's amazing. And those are stun grenades. I heard that those things can cause lethal injury just by themselves, literally.
Absolutely disgusting. Okay, and it's worth noting that this guy, Scott Olson, an Iraq veteran, served two tours in Iraq, suffered a fractured skull. A fractured skull from this. You know, excessive force? Hello? I mean, this is unbelievable. Now, they're saying he's in stable condition now, thank goodness, but I mean, this is absolutely disgusting. Okay, this guy wasn't doing anything that required that level of force. These people were not violent. The only violence is perpetrated by these cops. Absolutely disgusting. This happened in Oakland, right across the bay from San Francisco. Now, according to the reports I've read, I've got an article here from the San Francisco Chronicle on this. Apparently, he was upgraded to fair condition this morning at Highland Hospital in Oakland. He's Scott Olson. He was a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And this took place at the encampment at Frank Ogawa Plaza outside City Hall. Now, Olson's roommate, Keith Shannon, who served with him in Iraq, said that the doctors Wednesday night told him that Olson was unconscious and breathing with the help of a respirator.
Yikes.
He was initially in critical condition. The anti-war group said that he suffered a skull fracture when he was hit by a blunt object. The video apparently shows a protester, apparently was Scott Olson, being knocked to the ground at 14th Street and Broadway after the police lobbed an object, possibly a tear gas canister, at a group of protesters. And as he laid, now this is what the way the Chronicle is describing it, as he laid wounded in the street, other protesters came to his aid. The footage then appears to show an officer tossing another canister towards the group helping him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unbelievable. Now, of course, they say he appeared to be conscious after the incident, moved his hand to his head. He was a protester. He was supporting. He was going to work during the day, sleeping there at night.
And didn't deserve that kind of treatment. And that brings up the question. After 9/11, so much money went into local police departments to buy what is, in essence, military-grade equipment and things for crowd control, including some of these really exotic things like those sonic stunner devices and things like that really have no business being used on civilians who are exercising their First Amendment rights.
Exactly.
And that's all.
Okay. And what was even more interesting and frankly disgusting was this woman, Mayor Jean Kwan, who was a woman who apparently was an activist, was very involved in progressive issues. Had reported after this event that she was pleased to know that the incident, the confrontation between the police and the protesters had been, quote, relatively peaceful. Really? I mean, talk about betrayal. Talk about turning your back once you're in office and becoming something very different. I'll tell you, I hope the people of Oakland rise up and vote this person out of office.
Did she not have an issue with the police department about a year ago? But I'm not sure what that was all about. Have you heard about that angle?
clear. Yeah, apparently she had been arrested during another protest.
All right.
You know, but clearly, you know, once she became the mayor herself, she threw all those progressive ideals right out the window and became part of the problem instead of the solution. And I hope that she pays for it in the next election. I hope she is soundly defeated by a real progressive. That it's time that the people of Oakland who care about police out of control, injuring American heroes, disgusting behavior and violence committed against nonviolent citizens expressing their First Amendment rights. And I hope that she and her entire administration pay for it soundly at the polls. And if you're listening from Oakland tonight, I hope you'll do what you can to help make that possible. Okay? I hope there is a message sent to mayors like Mike Bloomberg, okay, who had the gall to say, oh, well, you know, the people who they're really protesting against are the people making $50,000 on Wall Street. You know, the people who you know, work as secretaries and clerks and stuff, which is, of course, a bunch of nonsense and proves that Mike Bloomberg, the richest person in New York, doesn't have a fucking clue what's going on in his own city. Okay? It tells you that when you elect millionaires to run government, this is what you get. You get millionaires supporting other millionaires. And let's not forget, Mike Bloomberg may call himself an independent, but the reality is that he donates millions of dollars every election to Republicans, the same people who are standing against progressive policies that he says he supports. So not only is he a liar, but he's a hypocrite as well, and he should pay for it. Okay, now we know he's not running for another term. Okay, but I just hope that the people who live in the city of New York will elect a real progressive next time, and not a fake pseudo liberal like Mike Bloomberg. Obviously, this is not a man who can be trusted. This is a man who supports the wealthy at the expense of the poor and middle class, and doesn't give a shit. As long as it brings in the money to his city and keeps his budget neat and tidy, okay? And lets his cops run wild, brutalizing people to the point where yet another Iraq veteran, I forget his name, forgive me, stood up in front of a bunch of cops at Times Square and stood as they were beating unarmed protesters and finally lost it and said, "There is no honor in this." And he was so right. And I'll tell you, you know, if you can get him on, you know, usually I don't, you know, talk about these guys unless I'm calling them out for something. But Keith Olbermann on Current has been doing some amazing coverage on this. And he's been having good people on, had this gentleman on, I forget his name, but he was a sergeant, a Marine sergeant, served several tours in Iraq, and he was just calling out these cops, going, "What are you doing? These are American citizens. Why are you hiring peaceful, unarmed American citizens? This isn't what I fought for. This isn't the kind of country that I laid down my life for, and it's disgusting." Okay, and then you take a guy like Scott Olson, went to Iraq two tours, and he's being brutalized by the Oakland police and their allies or compatriots or whatever you want to call them. Okay. Fractured skull. This is what peaceful, unarmed protesters should get. Tear gas, pepper spray, flashbang grenades. Yeah, there's violence in these protests, and 100% of it is being caused by police officers, which means it's being caused by the government. Yeah. Those are the people who we should be holding accountable. And by the way, just so you know, we are going to have a special guest appearance by the ever amazing Rice-A-Roni. You know him, you love him. He'll be on in a few minutes, and we've got a special announcement from Rye coming up. So stick around for that. And you know, but getting back to what I'm talking about here, I think we have to say, you know, you're brutalizing veterans who've laid down their lives for this country. You're tear gassing and firing beanbag rounds and perhaps, I'm told, rubber bullets, although that's unconfirmed, you know, into peaceful, unarmed protesters. This is your idea of protecting the First Amendment? This is your idea of democracy? As far as I'm concerned, this just goes even further to show exactly why the Occupy Wall Street and related protests are exactly right. And furthermore, it is not all about Wall Street. It's about a government that supports and defends them and attacks those who dare to speak out, who dare to exercise their First Amendment rights. And don't think they're not going to come for you next. The battle lines have been drawn. It's us versus them. It's the 99% versus the 1%. And that 1% includes our government leaders who are using the police as their attack dogs to slap down this uprising, to slap down the exercise of free speech in this country, who are attacking innocent, unarmed American civilian protesters who are exercising their freedom of speech. Remember that the next time that you go to the voting booth. Remember that. And remember who stands up for you and your civil rights, and remember who doesn't. Remember who stands against them. We need to make them pay. Don't forget, there is another election next month. Maybe not everywhere. In fact, I know it's not everywhere, but there are elections next month. Make sure that if there's an election in the area where you live, that they hear your voice loudly and clearly. They've taken a side. Make sure they know which side you're on. And we are going to, as I said, have Rice-A-Roni on Rye the show is on very the, shortly.
Rye's on the line, but a customer walked in on Rye. Rye is working at an extended stay hotel in Albuquerque, believe it or not. That's Rye's day job. And I've just been eavesdropping on Rye and the customer, and I do know now that at this wonderful place, the queen beds are on the first floor, which would be an important thing for most queens.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
So yes. We're waiting.
Queens, I am in favor of queens having beds. I am.
Thank God for that.
I support that.
So I'll keep listening
that is
and
an
eavesdropping.
Issue I can get behind.
I'm still eavesdropping and listening here, but well, if you'd like, we can play a little Divine music from
sure.
Divine.
Why don't you throw something on there, Mr. Mike, while I go get myself a cup of coffee.
That sounds really good. And we'll visit the restroom facilities while we're waiting for Rice-A-Roni to get done with the queen beds on the first floor. This is Walk Like a Man. We always think of Rice-A-Roni when this one comes on from Q1.FM and the Rebecca Giro Show.
See you in a couple.
my God. Well, something really strange has happened to the files. You know, we found that we have some corrupted files in our automation system here. That's a lovely thing, isn't it? So anyway, well, Becky, are you back?
I am indeed back.
We do have our caller on the line. Identify yourself, caller. State your beef.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, my God. It's Rice-A-Roni, and Rice-A-Roni walks like a man and talks like a woman. It's fantastic.
How you doing, honey? It's great to have you on.
I'm fantastic. I'm glad I can finally be on again.
Yeah, me too. Now, I happen to know, because Mr. Mike told me, that you have a very special announcement about something that's going on with you. So why don't you tell us all about it?
Please.
Well, I just started lactating. You meant a different announcement.
Love that one. That's a pretty good one to hear.
Yes. Rice-A-Roni University is going to be returning to Q1.FM.
Oh, thank God. We are saved. Finally, we'll have people who listen to us. It'll be so much better.
Oh, please. I think we do. I mean, we did not be
we
great,
do pretty good
do
with
okay.
this show, too.
We do pretty okay.
Y'all have some amazing listeners.
Well, that's
but yes, it's going to be starting this coming Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. We're going to start a whole new semester, class of 2012.
Now, this is an important thing to know about RSU because this is an educational experience for the listener. This just isn't any old radio show. This is something where you're going
to
get...
You're not listening to a radio show. You're attending a class.
And you're going to get a degree after years and years of this.
Exactly.
It'll be a degree issued.
This is the fourth incarnation. This is the fourth revision of RSU, so I do now have seniors who will be able to graduate.
And the graduating seniors can become hookers without any state licensing. Is this correct?
Oh, exactly. part of your degree that you get from us, all you have to do is tuck it inside your bra, maybe keep it in the back of your panties. If anybody pulls you up, you just pull that out, and you are a legal hooker.
Thank God.
There you go. All right. Well, that is totally awesome. And why don't you tell people who may or may not be familiar with the show, what do you do on the show?
Well, I call it edutainment because we educate while entertaining. I think every school should be like that because, quite frankly, lectures can get boring. Mm-hmm. Some of the things we discussed, we're going to be discussing a lot about, this gay bullying issue that we're seeing a, very terrifying rise in. So that's going to be a very poignant theme throughout the semester. We're also going to be discussing things like, gay men's attraction to straight men. And how this can be a problem.
And this comes from personal experience in your case. I know that.
It's actually an emotional crisis that I'm having at the moment.
I suspected that's what it was. All right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is going to be awesome. And I encourage everybody to make it a point to check this out.
But also, we're gonna be adding things into the show. Like, we're going to have automotive discussions.
Really?
Because we're going to talk about, vehicles and stuff like that, because I'm actually partnering with some other websites to bring in some content to the show, such as gaywheels.com, which is a website that reports on the automotive industry from a gay point of view. We're also going to be partnering with a website to bring us some sporting information. That way we can actually have a school sports team.
Wow, that's awesome. I think this is going to be great. I'm very excited about this. And I think you're going to be a great addition to Q1FM. Boy, we're getting ourselves a whole schedule here, Mr. Mike.
That's right.
Totally awesome.
Well, it's going to be talk and music Sunday night. And it's 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern time. And you have a co-host. Tell us about Saint, who is...
Yes, my new professor, Professor Saint.
Professor
of... He is the professor of kinkology.
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
He is actually a board member for the website, or the New Mexico FetLife Association.
Okay.
It's kind of a social network for kink.
I am actually familiar with FetLife, although not from that particular perspective. But FetLife is a very large website and has many, many different perspectives there, and I am not unfamiliar with FetLife, so I don't want to go into detail right now. But I am familiar with the community website. He is a community board member.
And he hosts a lot of events around here in Albuquerque. He hosts, like, Leather Pride events and rodeo events. We recently had a Smut Slam, which was absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be interesting.
Which is essentially a poetry slam for sex stories.
Well, that sounds interesting. I could riff off that.
Now, you're going to be taking this is a listener participation experience too. So you're going to be taking lots of listener calls.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah,
we will have a toll-free phone number that anyone can call. Skype, instant message programs. We'll even be taking messages through Twitter and Facebook. And
very, very cool. I think this is awesome.
Go to facebook.com/I don't have a keyword for it yet. So go to Facebook and search for Rice-A-Roni University.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And so this is all going to be happening for the first time Sunday night. And we should probably also let people know that I believe we are going to be rerun immediately after.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So you can have yourself a whole rockin' evening of LGBT talk and fun and stuff on Sunday nights.
How does it feel to have me be your repeat fluffer?
Oh, I love it. I love it. You're my lead-in, honey. Oh, my God. I am so excited. That's totally awesome. I'm always
willing to fluff anybody who needs it.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, like I say, I mean, this is a show that was around. You stopped doing it for a while, but now you're bringing it back, I guarantee.
And I've got to go.
Oh, okay.
Goodbye.
Probably
there is another queen looking for the queen size bed on the first floor of this rather strange hotel of ill repute.
We should point out to people that Rye was calling in from work.
And so work has to take precedence. That's going to be fantastic. Rye puts on an incredible show. You have to understand that this is an extremely crazy person. An extremely talented and crazy person who comes up with some of the most
crazy
amazing.
In a good way.
Well, that's right. Most of the really strange and unusual and entertaining perspectives on life. And I've learned a lot from Rye. Rye is a very good friend of this show and of Becky and me, and it's going to be fantastic. So Sunday nights, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern time on Q1.fm. They'll give you the number over the air to call in, and they're serious about having listener participation on that show. It's going to be so good.
Yeah. For that matter, so are we. We don't get a lot, but we would like to have some.
Sure.
So if you want to call in and talk to us, tell us what you thought about Jeremy Davis, tell us what you think about Rice-A-Roni. Tell us what you think about Scott Olson, Oakland, anything you want to talk about. Our number is 928-277-4921. Give us a call, 928-277-4921. I've also got AIM running. You can contact me. That's capital RLJ5862. You can send me an email, rjuroshow@gmail.com.
And you can also Skype in at Q1 Studio, all one word, Q1 Studio, and that's free. course.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you've got Skype, you can talk to us. We are looking for you. We would like to have you on the show. Tell us what you're thinking. You know, it's my fault because I don't mention the phone number often enough. I try to do it, but a lot of times I get rolling on a rant and I just forget. And that's on me and it's my fault. But we want to hear from you. This isn't only about Mike and myself. This is about you guys. This is about what matters in your life. And so we want to hear from you. What did you think about Jeremy Davis? I thought he had a lot of great stuff to say. Good stuff, as always. You know, now this was Jeremy's first time on the show. We're hoping to have him on again soon. What stories are hitting your hot buttons this week? You bring it up. We'll get into it. You know, there's all kinds of things. And I'll tell you, I think that we have to, as a community, start making some distinctions and saying, you know, as I was trying to do with Jeremy, and now, of course, I should point out, as you well know, Jeremy is the executive director, interim executive director of the National Stonewall Democrats. He speaks for the organization. So he's not the kind of person, you know, he's not going to call out Democrats in the same way we are. Although, you know, I think he acknowledges that we have some work to do in that area. The question that I still have, of course, is, you know, who really has that work to do? You know, it's easy. You hear these Democrats saying, oh, we support you in our issues when they're looking for your vote, when they're looking for your money, when they're looking for something from you, they're all about you and your issues. When you're looking for something from them, then all of a sudden things are different. And I think that's the biggest problem, is when you see an organization, for example, like the Human Rights Campaign, come out and endorse President Obama long before anyone else, you know that that's a problem. Because, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence. I said this on the show a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Human Rights Campaign comes out and publicly endorses Obama earlier than anybody else. All of a sudden, we have hearings on the Defense of Marriage Act. All of a sudden, we have President Obama, Kirsten Gillibrand, and all these other Democrats coming out and going rah-rah for the repeal of DOMA. You know, and what do we hear about ENDA? Nothing. Not a peep. We can't even get a straight answer out of the president's own press secretary. I mean, it's just, you know, you want to just slap these people. And you want to say, don't we deserve as a community to have these Democrats at least attempt to earn our votes instead of just considering it their due? And I will say that in this way, the Human Rights Campaign is hurting the movement. Yes, you heard me. They are hurting the movement by making it too easy for Democrats to go and avoid actually doing anything for LGBT workers and people. Okay, and they seem to think that, you know, oh, well, we'll talk about the repeal of marriage for a while, and then that'll be fine, and they'll leave us alone for a while. Wrong, because you know what? A lot of us don't have marriage focused as the key issue here. I'm sorry, okay? But you know what? As I said to Jeremy earlier tonight, if you can't get a job, if you can't feed your family, if you can't put a roof over their heads, how much does the right to marry really mean? How much does that really mean if you can't even feed yourself? I mean, does the right to file joint tax returns really matter? I mean, sure. Does that help LGBT families? Well, it would if these people could get jobs, if they weren't denied basic civil rights in most of the country. And my argument is, has been and always will be, that you make sure that the people can eat. First, you make sure that people can keep a roof over their heads. First, you make sure that people can earn a living. Then you worry about if they can save money on their taxes. First things first. Food and shelter. Boys, girls, everyone else, it's just common sense. Food and shelter has to come first, or the rest isn't going to matter. Because people who are hungry aren't going to march. People who are sleeping on the streets homeless aren't going to be lobbying. First, you take care of the basics, food and shelter. Then you worry about whether or not the richer folks, the folks who already have jobs and nice homes, get taken care of. But that's not what the Democratic Party is doing. The Democratic Party is starting at the top and, you know, not working its way down. They figure, well, we'll just give them marriage and all these people, they'll just vote for us. Because, you know, I've told this story a number of times. When I led an organization called Out for Democracy Transgender with Angela Brightfeather, who's a fellow trans activist, and we had a meeting in Washington, D.C., with the members at that time. It was the Kerry campaign, the LGBT outreach folks. And after the meeting, as it was breaking up, one of these guys, his name was Mark Seifert, and he looked at me and he said, well, you know, because I had said to him, and in general, I said, well, you know, this isn't really, you know, I'm not very happy with what we've heard here. Because basically they had told us, oh, we're not going to acknowledge your existence. Our candidate isn't going to acknowledge your existence. Our candidate is still opposed to your issues. But we'd like you to support us and tell your membership to support John Kerry for president. And basically my attitude was, well, why should I? Why should we? You know, and this guy, Mark Seifert, says to me, well, who are you going to vote for? George Bush? Just like that. And that's really the problem, is the Democratic Party doesn't feel that they have to make any sort of effort to earn our votes. And I think we need to disabuse them of that notion. And I'm hearing that in the Q1 chat room, we've got Bose says, I'm going to read this as he wrote it. He says, I was a Cub Scout in the late 1960s. In the late 90s, my son was enrolled in conservative Christian affiliate Cub Scout troop to ensure that I would not be able to participate in a meaningful traditional fashion.
Wow, that sounds tragic, actually. Who enrolled the kid?
It underscores the problem. Now, you know, you don't know in this particular case, you don't know whether the problem was really about the conservative Christian affiliate or the Cub Scouts. Both are acknowledged homophobic organizations. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Cub Scouts, we're talking about younger kids, you know, kids who are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. So I'm not so sure that homophobia really enters into it from the Cub Scouts perspective. But we do know that their overall organization, the Boy Scouts, is most assuredly avowedly anti-gay and avowedly homophobic.
Many places, in my experience here in the Southwest, troops are associated with the Mormon Church, and you know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said before, as I said earlier in the show, I was a Boy Scout. In fact, here I live in town I live in, North Brunswick, New Jersey, is actually was for many years the national headquarters of the Boy Scouts of America.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And they had a big place, a big, I don't know what you'd call it, compound. Here in town, okay. And when we were kids, we used to go riding up there. They had nature trails back there. Mm-hmm. They had a Boy Scout museum. lots of interesting things. And we were kids and we used to go there. And I was a member of Troop 50, which was, we had the distinction of being the only Boy Scout troop in America to hold our meetings at national headquarters. And it was just, I mean, literally a mile up the road from where I live. And we used to, like I said, when we were kids, we used to ride our bicycles there and go on the nature trails and the museum and all kinds of things. They've since moved on. They moved out to Houston, I think they've moved out to now.
Great experience. I was a Cub Scout, never made it to the Boy Scouts, but I loved being a Cub Scout. I loved all the knots. I loved all the quasi-patriotism when I was a little kid. I thought that was really good. I liked all the crafts. It wasn't really a bad thing for a kid to be doing.
No, not at all. And, of course, I was deep in the closet when this was going on.
Yeah.
Although we did have a Scoutmaster who I don't know for sure one way or another, but I had strong suspicions that he may have been a member of the tribe, let's just say. Sure. Not trans, but a gay man.
Okay.
I do not know that for a fact.
Oh. Been watching too many Herman Cain commercials, I think.
Yes, I'm trying to go for that old cough button and didn't quite reach it in time. But, so, you know, I will tell you, and this much I can tell you for a fact. There are gays in the Boy Scouts. Believe me when I tell you this, okay? But the truth of the matter is, everybody says, oh, you know, we've got things to worry about. What's going to go on in those tents and crap like that? The reality is those gays who are in the Boy Scouts are so deeply closeted, they wouldn't dare try anything because they don't want anybody to know. That's the reality. And that's what people don't understand, because it's the same thing as like the bathroom bullshit with trans people. People don't realize. They say, oh, they're going to go and attack people, blah, blah, blah. No, what trans people are going to do in the bathroom is get the hell in and out of there as quickly as possible because they don't want the hassle. They just want to go pee or take a dump or something. I mean, that's what people want. They want to get in and they want to get out. Okay. Same thing with the gay folks. They're looking to participate in the scout stuff. They're not looking to be gay because they know perfectly well that if people figure out that they're gay, that's going to be the end of their involvement with the scouts. And they're there for a reason, just like the kids are. They're there because they want to participate in scouting activities. The same thing with the adults. So they're not going to go around and risk that by trying to make some sort of a sexual move on somebody. So it's just ridiculous anti-LGBT stereotypes that are playing out here. Okay, and it's the homophobia of the leadership. You know, there was a big story that was going on for a long time in Philadelphia where they were using a public building to house the scouts, and they're openly homophobic, and they refuse admission to any known gay person. And so the city of Philadelphia had a problem with that because it's in direct conflict with the laws of the city of Philadelphia. And the law is if you want to use public space like a building like that at, you know, no expense, well, then you have to comply with the law of the city. And the Boy Scouts went to court saying it's our right to be bigots, basically. It's our right to discriminate against trans people. You know, and so and what I believe happened, and I'm not sure, if somebody knows differently, please call in, check me on this, because I'm not exactly certain of the result. But I believe what they did was they resolved it by having I don't remember. They either allowed them to use it or they charged them a certain amount for the use. And it was a whole big thing. And again, if you know better, if you know what actually happened here, give me a call. 928-277-4921. Give us a call. 928-277-4921. We've got, you know, a few more minutes here. We can take your call. Shoot us a call. Let us know what's going on in your neck of the woods. I'll tell you, it's scary, and you know, it's so interesting to see the difference. And I'm not sure exactly why this is, but the difference between the homophobic Boy Scouts who simply exclude, you know, gay people, and the Girl Scouts who are inclusive and welcome transgender participants like Bobby. I mean, I think that speaks volumes about the kind of people that are running these organizations. One organization is saying, you know, we're an inclusive organization and we welcome all girls, even transgender girls. Okay. And of course, it brings up the distinction. I like to make this distinction all the time. You folks probably understand it, but I've confused the hell out of some people when I say that there's a difference between being a girl or a woman and being female. One refers to who you are, your identity, how you present yourself to the world. That's woman, that's girl. And the other refers to what you got between, you know, in your panties. You know, do you have that piece of meat or do you have something else? That's the difference between, you know, you can be a woman and not be female. You can be a boy and not be male, or a man and not be male. I think that's a distinction. And I would suggest to people, you know, I mean, not that I'm any great sage of gender identity or anything, but I would say that maybe what we should be doing in order to help non-LGBT people get this, to get the whole transgender thing, is start making that distinction. To start saying there's a difference between the social identity of girl or woman and the biological reality of female, and the social identity of boy or man, and the physical, biological identity of male. I think maybe that's what we need to do. And we need to stop, you know, maybe what trans girls and trans women need to do. And I know, you know, and if you want to call me on this, you got a problem with this, call me up. I've given you the number. I'll give it to you one more time. Let's see. We've got about 9 minutes left here or so. So you can call me in and give me a hard time about it. 928-277-4921. Oh, God, didn't reach that button fast enough this time either. But you know, maybe what we as trans women and trans girls need to do is drop the term female and understand that what we are is male. If we have our penis still, well, that means you're a male, like it or not. You're not. You can be a male woman. You can be a male girl. You don't have, you know, the two things don't necessarily have to follow. That you don't have to necessarily say that one does not preclude or necessarily include the other. Okay? You don't have to be female in order to be a girl. You don't have to be male in order to be a boy. Maybe that's where the line needs to be. And I don't know. You know, again, if you guys have a better idea, if you want to hit me with your thoughts, 928-277-4921. You can also hit me in the chat room. Mr. Mike will be passing the comments on to me. I'm not in there, but he is. You can also catch me on AOL Instant Messenger, capital RLJ 5862, Twitter, Becky Juro, email, rjuroshow@gmail.com. Now, I'm doing my best to keep up with when checking everything on as much as I can. I may miss your tweet or your something. I'm doing the best I can to keep up with it. But if you've got something to say, please say it. One of us will catch it. You know, maybe that's where the line needs to be. Maybe there needs to be, in order for people to get a handle on this better, maybe that's where the line needs to be. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm throwing it out there as a suggestion. And maybe, you know, that way girls like Bobby, who are male, at least currently, and who's to say what Bobby is going to be when she grows up? Who's to say? Bobby is 7 years old. There's a long time for Bobby to figure out who she is.
I love Bobby's parents for letting Bobby decide what's going on.
Absolutely. Bobby, I mean, I don't know. Father was not mentioned in this article that we read.
Okay.
But Bobby's mom seems like a pretty cool mom. Somebody who is okay with this, who basically wants her kid to be happy, regardless. That's what it's about for the mom. And really, I mean, what more is there? How much could you possibly ask of any mother but to put her child's happiness first? I mean, isn't that really what it's about, being a parent? Now, I should say, I am not a parent. I am not a parent. I don't pretend to be a parent. I don't pretend to speak for parents. But I know that a lot of you are. And I think that, you know, speaking as a non-parent, I would think that the number one concern of parents for their kids is that they be happy and healthy. I mean, when you get right down to it, what more is there? What more could any parent possibly hope for their kids? And I only hope that this is the trend. You know, and again, I want to say it again because I think they deserve it. Kudos to the Girl Scouts of Colorado for saying we are an inclusive organization and Bobby is welcome to participate. I think that is so cool. You know, because they very easily could have said, we don't want to get involved with this. You know, they could have said that. And chances are there would have been a lot of people who would have supported them in that. Just like there were a lot of people who supported the Boy Scouts when they got into it with gay scoutmasters and gay scouts, and they decided that they were going to exclude gay members, and they got a lot of support from the right. So the Girl Scouts certainly didn't have to do this. You know, I mean, this is Girl Scouts. They're making paper flowers and making s'mores. They're not standing around in a circle checking out each other's genitalia. You know what I mean? They're just a bunch of little girls doing little girl things. And that's just what it should be. That's what Girl Scouts should be about. I think it is so cool, and I hope that they're the example. I really do. When I hear something like this, as much as we bitch about the way things are for adults and the way this is for folks who are working folks, middle class, lower and middle class folks, for folks who are trying to make a living, who are trying to find a job, who are trying to advocate for our civil rights, and trying to advocate for equality and whatever form of equality that happens to be, whether it's equal rights in workplace, in marriage, in all things. And you hear a story like this, where an organization just takes a stand and says, we're not going to discriminate against kids. We're not going to hurt children to satisfy some religious-based agenda. You know, that takes courage, okay, because you know that there are parents who are going to have a problem with that. And just like there are parents who are going to have a problem with anything, pro or con, if they took either stand, regardless of the stand that they took, you're gonna take flack from one side or the other side, either way. And so I give kudos to the Girl Scouts of Colorado. And again, I hope it's something, this is representative of the way the national organization has chosen to deal with this. We should really commend them and, you know, buy an extra box of Girl Scout cookies. By the way, we're almost out of time here, but I just want to say this just came over the wire on TweetDeck. Breaking news, Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan is supposed to address the Occupy Oakland General Assembly tonight at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So that means 10 p.m. our time out here on the East Coast.
All right.
So that'll be interesting. And so if you can get a chance, if you want to tune into that, if you're in the area, you might want to check that out.
How about an apology from her? That's what I'm looking for.
I don't know. It doesn't say what she's going to say.
Resignation? Oberman really took her to task the other night. And I think that's perfect. I'm glad that happened.
Absolutely. And I encourage everybody, check out Keith Oberman's show on Current if you can get it in, because it is real. He's doing some amazing, amazing work on the Occupy. He's got the best coverage of the Occupy protests of literally anyone, hands down, better than MSNBC, better than CNN, better than any of them. And so I encourage you to check it out. And well, we are out of time. I want to say thank you to Jeremy Davis for joining us. Thank you to Rai Cerrone for calling in and letting us know about his new show. Check him out Sunday nights. Don't forget, we will be repeating the show. If you missed anything, the show will repeat again in 5 minutes. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting this media, for supporting progressive rights. And we will catch you next week with Bill Browning. Good night, everybody.